This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Women in black. Doing your interviews of witnesses, do you find because of the fact that popular culture has been so polluted with the men in black legend, particularly after the movies came out, and then we have, of course, things like X-Files. How do you separate that influence from a possible real event, Nick?
Well, again, you know, I think the only time it comes into the equation is if a person is fabricating something and they've been inspired by the movies or the TV shows. I think, you know, for the rest of the time, it doesn't really. Where things like the X-Files possibly benefited ufology was it actually made the subject more popular and encouraged people to come forward because, you know, it was in the public eye. And more people coming forward, so more people felt comfortable about coming forward. You know, it was like a rolling, spiraling situation. So I don't think movies as such prompt, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think movies as such prompt people to fake events. I think in some cases they encourage them to talk, but like I said with the Men in Black, I think it's the opposite. I think people see the Men in Black mystery as so weird, it could only be a Hollywood creation unless they were, you know, they were well-versed on the UFO subject, which most people aren't, you know, because they're just not interested in it. So when somebody tells them, you know, oh, I saw a man in black, they're like, what? Those guys off, you know, from the movies, you mean? No, a real man in black. Well, no, there's no such thing. Hollywood made them up. No, they didn't. You know, it's kind of that situation. That's when I think, you know, it causes problems.
Well, you know, looking at the real legitimate cases that kind of pass your investigative muster, have you come to any sort of potential theories on what these beings are, where they're from, and what their agenda is?
Well, I mean, in terms of the agenda, they don't just turn up in UFO cases. I mean, a classic example would be, like we mentioned earlier, Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where they turn up in relation to UFOs and, you know, the Mothman sightings, things like that. I've got a few weird cases in the book where people who'd seen Bigfoot and strange creatures had men in black and women in black encounters. There's a couple of well-known famous men in black encounters at Loch Ness. People who were looking for the Loch Ness monsters, as bizarre as it all sounds. So the imagery that people get to start with is that they silence people who see UFOs. But it actually goes far beyond that. That goes to the women in black and the men in black. It covers numerous aspects of the paranormal. And certainly, you know, I've mentioned this before, but without doubt in, you know, at least the last sort of 22, 23 years, you know, my views changed a long time ago from just believing that all this phenomena is extraterrestrial. You know, I think we're dealing with something that's sort of far closer to home, maybe coexists alongside us, maybe even masquerades as extraterrestrial, but is not good old 1950s Donald Kehoe ufology. You know, for me, that here is as dead as a T-Rex, you know.
Take notes, Gene.
I am taking notes. Don't even mention the Kehoe word.
Yeah, because then somebody somewhere is playing the Kehoe game will have to take a shot.
Yeah, well, let him.
You can't help it because the thing is here, so many things in UFO field are unchanged over the years. But let's talk about changes. Comparing the first reports of men in black in the 50s and the early reports of women in black, has any of that undergone any change whatever in the ensuing 60 years or so?
Only from the perception of the public and from the perception of a lot of people in ufology who may not be overly conversant with the men in black mysteries. You know, they think they're from the government until you read the reports. But, you know, back in the 50s, you know, when you had people like Albert Bender and you know, Gray Barker and Keel and Steiger you know, most of the reports that reached them were of these sort of stranger, pale, skinny, weird men in black who didn't seem to understand our mannerisms. They didn't understand our food. They talked in a weird fashion as if they didn't really understand what they were saying. It was almost like they were paraphrasing, you know, the words without actually understanding what they meant. And the reports I get today are still like that. You know, the reports I get of the men in black today are of guys turning up late at night on the doorstep in fedoras and skinny black ties, you know, like something straight out of a 1950s gangster movie, except for the fact that physically they look very sort of creepy and strange. You know, they look like a cross between, you know, having anorexia and having anemia. That's the best way you can describe them. You know, they just look unhealthy and sickly and menacing. So nothing has changed that much in terms of what the witnesses have reported since the past. But, you know, it's just kind of ufology's fault, I think is probably the best way to describe it, in not letting or not necessarily getting across to people the reality of the Men in Black mystery, and instead letting people think, oh, well, they're obviously from some secret agency, from the Pentagon or whatever. That assumption exists because most people in the subject don't bother to do anything to rectify it because they think it's too weird to mess with, you know, so they leave it alone.
Yeah, I only have one case in my files from my San Luis Valley investigations, and it was an experiencer who went through a period where her mail was being rifled through and then being stolen. Stuff that she knew that she was being sent would never arrive. And she said one day she just happened to look down. She had a driveway that was quite long, several hundred yards long, and she saw what she described as an old-fashioned, you know, luxury car, black. And she said two guys were going through her mailbox. And I asked her to describe them, and she said, well, they look like the Blues Brothers. Now, she told me this. She said that she had actually filed a report with the county sheriff, and I verified that with the sheriff's office, and a report had been filed. Plus, she had filed a report with the postal inspector, the regional postal inspector, and they actually opened a case file on her claim, and she was forced, actually. I mean, it got so bad that she was trying to monitor her mailbox as much as she could, and she ended up having to get a post office box in town because of this, you know, constant problem of and they would go through and tear some of the stuff up and just leave it on the ground, even. Very, very bizarre. But they never came to the door. And she was kind of happy about that because she just was really weirded out by it. So because my name isn't really associated with the subject, I possibly, or maybe we didn't have very many of them going around at the, you know, during that time period in the 90s. That's the only real, I think, you know, claim that I have in my files. But it really, at the time, it sort of kind of forced me to go back into the literature and really reacquaint myself and get up to speed on the whole phenomenon. One of my favorite accounts comes from Jacques Vallée's book, Messengers of Deception. I think it was a case where, wasn't it the case where the man in black sat down and was given some Jell-O and he tried to eat it with a knife or something?
He tried to drink it, actually.
He tried to drink it.
Yeah, but there's a lot of weird stories like that in relation to the men in black and the women in black in relation to food and drink. They kind of just stare at it as if they don't know what to do with it. But, I mean, one of the interesting things, when you just said about, you know, with that the witness you were talking about, how some of her mail was just torn up and whatever, that's actually, things like that happen quite often where the men in black and the women in black go out of their way to let the witness know they're being watched or played with or intimidated. You know, in other words, if the woman hadn't seen them at the mailbox and she hadn't found the torn up mail, she might just have thought, you know, there wasn't any mail.
We have Nick Redfern talking about women in black. People in Black or Things in Black with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know, the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
And now, three recent financial memories. Remember the market drops of 02, the financial crisis of 08, the flash crash of 2010.
It's not if, but when.
What do you have in place to protect your profits? OnTheMarkMoney.com introduces WealthGuard, a complete portfolio monitoring system that sends out direct alerts when your accounts hit a targeted downside value, and it works with all your retirement accounts.
Even 401k.
Learn how to get WealthGuard free. Go to OnTheMarkMoney.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Attention citizens, this man has received national attention for accurately predicting every major financial trend, including the market crash of 2008. His name is Harry Dent, and in his newly released book, he is making even bigger and bolder predictions that have the potential to devastate the world economy and your personal wealth. You can get a free copy of Harry Dent's bestseller, The Sale of a Lifetime, containing never-before-published information by simply visiting www.saleofalifetime.com/free book. Again, that's saleofalifetime.com/free book.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, so interesting point you made, Nick Redfern, that maybe these beings, whatever they are drawing attention to themselves by nature of their actions, such as tearing up someone's email, someone's physical mail.
Well, Yeah, and I think the reason why they go out of their way to be seen is because the only way you can intimidate a person is if you let them know, you know, that you're being watched or whatever. You know, if the person's blissfully unaware of it, well, it is a case of ignorance is bliss. You know, the only way to frighten the people is to stand outside their house or get out the car and stare through the window or make weird phone calls at 2 a.m. in the morning, you know, and the strange bleeps on the line. That kind of thing, I know from speaking to people, does sort of destabilize them. And the Men in Black and Women in Black reports, both of them, the MIV and the WIV, are very good at destabilizing people and making them paranoid and, you know, sort of sometimes, you know, having them sort of descend into almost like a state of nervous breakdown, really, when this goes on and on. So, you know, unfortunately, from the perspective of the witnesses, they're very good at doing things like that. You know, so I think sometimes there's no actual reason for it other than to let the witness see it happening. In other words, you know, there may actually be no reason why the Men in Black wanted to read the woman's mail. The whole point may have been that if they did it long enough, eventually she would see them doing it. Right. It would have an effect on her, and that may have been the whole point of it.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it happened. You know, many of these accounts where they seem to be unfamiliar, almost like they're uncomfortable in their own skins. They don't seem to understand their surroundings. They parrot phrases like they're mimicking somebody telling them what to say, and they're saying it, but they don't really know what it means. You know, this kind of reminds me of almost a temporary entity, almost like a tulpa, like these beings are created to do one specific thing and just don't have the personal history to pull it off in a completely convincing manner. It's almost like these beings are temporary. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, well, that's actually one of the interesting theories, that the idea that they aren't sort of self-aware beings. They're sort of created, you know, like a biological robot, or some people think they're almost like the Matrix scenario, that if you were in your living room being threatened by a man in black and somebody else was in the room or looking through the window, they might not see anybody else there. They might just see you in a weird daze. The theory is that perhaps the entire event is kind of like a highly sophisticated 3D hologram, like a sophisticated computer program, which is sent out by some bigger intelligence to silence people. And like any program that is rigid and static, it performs the same task over and over again. You know, that might explain why we never catch them, why they always vanish at the door, why the person always feels in like a weirded out state when they're being grilled by them. You know, the idea that they really are temporary, but they're also so sophisticated in their creation, if you like, that they are somehow semi-self-aware of what they're doing, but they're not really sure why. And that might explain why even they seem not fully aware of why they're actually threatening people.
Just a thought that came to me here. We see these almost unreal beings. What about the people who see them? Is there anything common about them other than maybe having experienced a paranormal event? Nothing in their background that would be common?
There's nothing so much common in terms of like physical traits or anything like that. But in many of the cases that I've found where even if there seems to be a strong UFO angle, prior to getting involved in ufology, a lot of the people who've seen the Women in Black in particular, less or so with the Men in Black, but still a lot, prior to getting into ufology, they are involved in sort of far more darker paranormal research and work. And then they kind of gravitated towards ufology after that. But many of them were sort of very sort of learned in the occult and rituals and rites, and, you know, as if that had somehow attracted the attention of these entities. In some cases, there actually isn't a UFO component with the Women in Black, but there is always some sort of paranormal component. But a lot of the people involved, you know, have these occult overtones. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything particularly. You know, you could make a good argument that somebody who likes watching sci-fi is going to like watching horror movies. in the same way somebody who's into UFOs might also be into Bigfoot. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I have found a large number of people who have had Women in Black encounters, and they've been in ufology, but they have also messed with Ouija boards and, you know, as I said, rituals and rites to, you know, summon up supernatural entities, that kind of things.
Chris, you were going to say something.
Yeah, we've already gone by the point, but I'll kind of go backwards here. You mentioned that they don't seem to be self-aware in many cases. They seem to be parroting an agenda that they possibly don't even understand, but they're going through the motions. I mean, classic tricksterism. You know, if you look at the definition of trickster, the trickster is not self-aware, and it doesn't have a specific personal agenda. It would seem to me that these are perfect trickster forms in the way that they are presented. It's almost like they're going through the motions and they don't even realize why, and they don't even realize that they're doing it, really. It's almost like they're on automatic pilot or something.
Yeah, that's exactly how they are. You know, it's a good way of describing them. It's like automatic pilot. But, you know, one of the interesting things is on this issue of them not being sort of fully self-aware and the whole trickster angle, you know, they do sort of mess with people's minds, sometimes in a very dangerous and ominous fashion, but sometimes just in a weird way. Like, for example, there are cases where men in black and women in black have been in people's homes, and it's almost like they're forced to steal something and take it with them. One of the most famous ones was told by John Keel in the Mothman Prophecies, involving a local journalist, Mary Heyer. This weird-looking man in black came into her office late at night, kept staring at this ballpoint pen on the table, and suddenly grabbed it and ran out into the night cackling with this weird cackle. And there are a lot of cases like that where the MIB and the WIB have been in people's homes, and they'll stare at some object and they'll grab it before they leave. Or the person goes out the room, and when they come back, you know, hours later, they realize something's missing, you know. And now that's sort of not definitive trickster approach, but it is the approach of something that is playing with the person's mind. You know, it's just an odd thing that the person remembers that, oh, yeah, you know, he stole a spoon off, you know, a cup and saucer or whatever, or, you know, he stole this or stole that. And you can find that in a lot of cases. And also, you know, they give names that, you know, sort of tie in with sort of ancient name.
We'll find out about those names and more with Nick, Gene, and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. 100% grass-fed beef for your health. When comparing to commercial raised, they offer more good fats while cutting the bad. Antioxidant rich, including vitamin E and C, plus beta carotene. Free of added hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all of your fresh, non-cooked products, the only ingredient is 100% grass-fed beef. Go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to receive 30% off your order. Go to MidasResources.com or find us on Facebook.
Back pain doesn't take vacations. It never celebrates holidays. It's on the job 24/7 to keep your life exactly where it is, in limbo. But it doesn't have to be that way, because Laser Spine Institute can help you take back your life from chronic neck and back pain. With a less than 1-inch incision, our minimally invasive procedures have provided relief to over 60,000 patients with a 97% patient satisfaction rate. So get ready to stand tall and live the life you've imagined for yourself without pain. Are you or a loved one suffering from a bulging disc, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, pinched nerve, or degenerative disc disease? Call our spine care consultants now at
855-519-BACK.
For a no-cost MRI review and to learn more, it's time to say goodbye to chronic neck and back pain.
Call 855-519-BACK now to see if laser spine surgery is right for you. That's 855-519-BACK.
What have you got to lose? Laser Spine Institute, the leader in minimally invasive spine surgery.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention heartburn drug users. If you or a loved one has taken Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, and suffered serious kidney damage, chronic kidney disease, or kidney failure, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Studies from the JAMA Internal Medicine indicate a significant increased risk of acute and chronic kidney disease from taking proton pump inhibitors. If you or a loved one was diagnosed with kidney failure or chronic kidney disease after taking Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk now. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Call 800-225-8944. That's 800-225-8944. Again, 800-225-8944. Call now.
Winter has just begun, and are you already tired of being cold? How would you like to never be cold again? This is Dale with Fortress Clothing, and I'm here to tell you, you will never be cold again with Fortress. If you're tired of freezing your butt off, elk hunting, sitting in a tree stand, deer hunting, winter camping, fishing, ice fishing, no longer fear the cold. If you snowmobile, ski, snowboard, get Fortress. Sledding with the kids, shoveling the walks, shopping, or if you or your spouse get cold feet at home, get Fortress. If you're stuck outside working in the cold or find yourself in an emergency situation, get our winter bug out bag and you will never be cold again. Fortress is the answer, so quit complaining and go to fortressclothing.com. It's a mid-layer garment that goes with anything you want to wear. Enter coupon code radio and get 20% off any item. Go now while we still have inventory. FortressClothing.com.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Okay, Nick used the term ancient names in our previous segment with Gene and Chris, talking about women in black, men in black, strange beings. Tell us more, ancient names.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of cases where, you know, the men in black used sort of the names of sort of straight out of ancient mythology, like Mr. Neptune, Mr. Zeus. Those are two that I've got on file. With the women in black, I've got one that used the name Athena. You know, and there's a lot of cases like that where it's almost like they're leaving a subtle clue for the person to look into who they actually were at a greater level, because they go out of their way to be so strange, you know. So it's almost like in some respects, it's like a test on the person to see what their reaction would be, as much as it is about terrifying them. And, you know, all of this sort of goes completely against the grain of the idea of, you know, the FBI flashing ID cards or whatever. I tell you, one of the weirdest aspects of this entire mystery is that I've got four cases on file. Four might not sound a lot, but when I tell you what the connection is, you know, it's actually quite significant. I've got four cases where people encountered men in black or women in black either watching or listening to the soundtrack to Rosemary's Baby. I've got actually two who watched the movie, one that listened to the soundtrack, and Linda Godfrey, a friend of mine, she's got one concerning a guy who read a book on, read the original novel based on, that the movie was based on. And again, you know, these things then manifested after they'd either watched the movie, read the book, or listened to the soundtrack. One of the guys who had probably the creepiest experience of all is a guy named Peter Beckman. Peter's an actor and a voiceover artist. If you look up Peter Beckman, B-E-C-K-M-A-N, plus voiceover artist, you'll find, because I interviewed him for my previous Men in Black book, he had a really weird experience in the late 60s with a friend of his when they were listening to the soundtrack, and then suddenly, you know, the entire atmosphere in the room shifted, and there was this sudden knock on the door, and there were these two really weird, again, skinny, pale MIB there, and for Peter and his friend, it was as if they'd been almost sort of mind-controlled in some way, and it was very, you know, so those experiences are really weird, you know, when they turn up after people have been watching specific movies and things like that.
Does the fact of reading certain types of books or watching movies or whatever, does that seem to attract any of this?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of cases where, and particularly in relation to the Women in Black, where somebody was really heavily involved in the occult or the UFO subject, but actually weren't part of the scene. In other words, you know, they did a lot of work privately and didn't write for magazines or journals, you know, didn't go on the internet and, you know, form chat groups or whatever, you know, didn't speak at conferences. But the Women in Black knew about it, or if they had one sort of pet project. For example, in the book, I talk about a really weird non-UFO case involving a guy who was trying to find the last resting place of the legendary King Arthur in England. And he told me how he got this really, really weird visit from this equally weird woman in black. This was back in 2000, who warned him to stay away from King Arthur-based research. And she was just like all these other women in black, sort of pale, looked quite attractive, but there was just something about her that, you know, set the alarm bells ringing. But he hadn't, you know, he wasn't somebody who, even in that field, talked about it. It was his private passion. So, we do have this sort of anomaly where we don't really know how or why they're able to suddenly just pick up on the radar of someone who's doing this or doing that.
Are there ever cases where the woman in black or the man in black just seem to be normal humans? They always seem to be one step beyond.
Well, there are a few, and this is where the subject gets a little bit confusing, because if you read a few reports, and granted it is a few, there are actually a few of them which we can trace back to government agencies, where somebody turned up in a black suit, a black fedora, and warned a witness not to talk about a particular case. There was a famous one in England in the early 60s involving a teenage girl named Anne Henson, who said, you know, she'd seen this strange light in the sky late one night. A couple of nights later, this guy turned up on the doorstep in a black suit, black hat, black tie, black car, and warned her not to talk about what she'd seen. And she'd actually drawn some, like, little picture of this thing over the hill behind the house, and he took it with him, and that's something the men in black do, you know, they confiscate things. But what's important about this case is that the official file on it actually surfaced officially through the British government's Freedom of Information Act, and it identified the man in question as an employee of what's called the Provost and Security Services, which is the UK equivalent of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the AFOSI. So, to get to your point, I think what has happened on a few occasions is that when military agencies want to silence people to legitimate UFO encounters, they may actually mimic the real men in black and the women in black. They may not know any more than we do about what the MIB really are, but they know that if necessary, they can employ the legend and the lore of the men in black. And, you know, literally have their guys go out and dress like that and act a little bit strange to threaten the person. And, you know, if the person speaks about it, they're going to get laughed at. So I think that may have happened on a few occasions where, as I said, the government probably doesn't have a full awareness of what the MIB are, but it doesn't stop them from mimicking them when it suits their favour, you know. So admittedly, there is this sort of grey area where some of them could be government people, but in a very odd fashion, so to speak.
Go ahead, Gene.
Well, if you want to say something, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to mention that One quality with descriptions of from witnesses that seemed to be fairly consistent through the 50s and 60s was a description that they appeared oddly sort of oriental looking. Do we still have that description in more modern cases?
Yeah, they're often described as having, well, not as many, but there are a lot of reports where the witnesses have described today that their eyes look abnormally large. Not sort of, you know, eye-popping, no pun intended, eye-popping large, but larger than they should be and wider spread. And some of the witnesses felt that's why, granted it was just their opinions, but they're probably right, I think, why they wore these wraparound sunglasses, because it was only when the man in black or the woman in black was close to them, they could actually see, you know, just manage to make out through the sunglasses how big the eyes really were. So I think, you know, this camouflage angle comes into play. But yes, we still do get reports today of sort of anomalies with the eyes, but they tend to be sort of larger eyes, wider spaced eyes. And again, you know, that the face, very often in the past, the skin was described as olive color. Today, it's far more described as sort of very pale, almost white. And when I say white, I mean like a sheet of paper white. And, you know, again, if you sort of remove the wig, you remove the sunglasses, you remove the turned-up collars, and you see them in full daylight rather than in the shadows, they might look extremely non-human, you know. So, some aspects of it in that respect have changed over the years, but other ones, you know, it is, you know, like we discussed sort of an archetypal man in black in the 50s is still very much like the archetypal man in black today as well.
We've got more to come on men in black, women in black, but not things in black, or maybe they are. With Gene, Chris, and Nick, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based only upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Why be held hostage by your wireless carrier for 2 years? What if there were no contracts, no activation fees, no tracking, tracing, or draconian gimmicks? All on America's largest 4G LTE networks. Introducing PixWireless.com. Activate your Sprint, AT&T, and unlock GSM phones instantly. Bring your own device and make the switch today. Here's how. Call or click 1-800-205-9513 or PixWireless.com. Spell P-I-X. PixWireless.com.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
My name is Robin. I'm 47 years of age. I absolutely love One World Whey. It was about 5 years ago when a trainer told me it was the end-all of protein powders. One day when I ran out, I decided to try other brands. I spent 8 months and could not find a replacement. I went through tons of brands, types, and flavors, and almost all of them tasted unnatural and not pleasant. When it all boiled down, I came right back to One World Whey. I buy the cost-effective 5-pound container, and my family craves their One World Whey too. I look forward to and enjoy having my One World Whey and feel great after I drink it. Thank you, Synergistic Nutrition, for perfecting a protein powder in the product One World Whey. From taste to how it makes me and my family feel, you get an A++.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
And now, three recent financial memories. Remember the market drops of 02, the financial crisis of 08, the flash crash of 2010.
It's not if, but when.
What do you have in place to protect your profits? OnTheMarkMoney.com introduces WealthGuard, a complete portfolio monitoring system that sends out direct alerts when your accounts hit a targeted downside value, and it works with all your retirement accounts,
even 401k.
Learn how to get WealthGuard free. Go to OnTheMarkMoney.com.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Before we go on, let's mention that we have a second radio show that we call After the Paracast. It's available exclusively to those who subscribe to the Paracast Plus. To learn more, you go to plus.theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. The benefits include the commercial-free version of this show, better quality audio, videos, more goodies, plus.theparacast.com. We're talking to Nick Redfern about Men in Black, Women in Black, and all that stuff. Nick, following these individuals, beings, creatures over the years, has anything happened to you that's weird as a result?
Well, that's one of the questions I always get asked. Now, I've never had that sort of, you know, classic late night knock on the door or anything like that. But what I have had is like a few really weird synchronicities concerning the Men in Black. I'll give you an example. When I was putting the final touches to my last book on the Men in Black, which is just called Men in Black. It came out in late 2015, about August, September 2015. And I was putting the final touches to it in, I think it was June, thereabouts. And I just literally finished the Word document, closed it down, and was getting ready to send it to my agent and publisher, Lisa Hagen. And I had a bang in my apartment. Now, it's not a big apartment, you know, it's only 400 square feet. So it couldn't have come from very far away. So I looked in the living room, nothing there, and went into the bedroom. And what had happened was that one of the pictures I've got on the wall had fallen off. You know, I've got sort of around the room about 10 different pictures, you know, one of like Bigfoot, the other one's Nessie, et cetera, et cetera. And the one that had fallen off the wall, it had fallen from about 6 feet up, and the wooden frame had broken and the glass had shattered. And what it actually was, it was one of the few that wasn't a painting. What it was a framed letter or photocopy of a letter written by Albert Bender, the guy who kicked off the Men in Black mystery back in the early 50s. So, in other words, you know, I'd finished the Men in Black book, closed the program down, ready to send it, and then at that very moment, I do mean like within seconds, this framed letter of Albert Bender warning people about the Men in Black fell off the wall and shattered. Now, that's a true story. And that was, there have been several weird things like that have happened to me. I had a really weird spate. And by weird spate, I mean like non-stop for like 3 days where when I was doing anything in relation to the Men in Black, I would have one of these sort of weird 11-11 moments where everywhere I go, I'd see 11-11. Which, you know, the 11-11 phenomenon is, you know, sort of one of the more weirder modern-day mysteries. So, you know, a lot of strange things like that have happened to me.
They haven't gotten to you and said, Nick, don't do this anymore. Has anyone ever said that to you?
No one's ever said that to me. The only time I've got people said, don't talk about this, is when, from their perspective, they're worried about not being quoted or, you know, or being quoted, I should say. But no one's ever come to me and said, don't write about this, don't talk about that. And I think one of the main reasons is because the people who primarily, not always, but people who primarily visited and threatened witnesses, not investigators. Now, there have been, you know, more than a few people have been visited by the Men in Black and Women in Black who are investigators of the phenomenon. But for the most part, they are people who've had the encounter themselves. So, you know, I've not seen a UFO hovering over, you know, my apartment. I've not had an abduction experience. I'm someone who's investigated these things. So that may well account for why I haven't had the knock on the door, because I'm not perceived as a threat where the witnesses, for some odd reason, are sort of perceived as threats.
I've only had a couple, but one of them was an MIB, but it was a man in beige.
Oh, well, I've actually got a few of those in the most recent book as well.
Oh, do tell.
A beige safari suit. Oh, I've mentioned on the show quite a number of times when I was looking into the underground base subject in the along the border of Colorado and New Mexico, and I was visited by a director from the Institute of Social Architecture who suggested that maybe there were some things I was getting into that most people don't have a need to know, and I should probably start. He said, you should question, if I were you, I would question your motivations. And he started doing NLP power moves and mimicking my body language, and it was very strange, creepy.
I can remember one weird thing that did happen to me, and this was back in 2001. I was in the process of, you know, moving to the US to live, and I was at Heathrow Airport. I was in the line to check my bag in. Granted, the bag was quite heavy, and it was like one that had to be checked all the way through, and I think, if I remember right, it was overweight, and I had to pay some extra anyway, because I was taking so much over with me, back and forth. So I was in line, and there was this old guy sort of tapped me on the shoulder, and he kind of looked like, you know, sort of one of the elderly guys. If you remember the X-Files, you know, there was like that MJ-12 group, and they were all made up of like old guys, you know, from big reputations and backgrounds and from powerful families, all that kind of thing, you know, and they're all in their suits in these sort of dark rooms and whatever.
Well, that's all they have left of their lives, is just to get together, these 12 people. That's it. They have no family. They just get together every few years and plot havoc.
Exactly. But anyway, what the guy, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, do you want to put your case on, what he got? He basically got like a little thing on wheels, you know, where you could put your case on there and push it along much easier. And I said, okay, thanks. And he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm moving to the US to live. And he said, whereabouts? I said, to Texas. And he said, oh, yeah, Texas, that's the home of the Kennedy assassination. And then he said, oh, you know, you shouldn't believe all those conspiracy theories about things like that. And then he actually turned round and got out the line and vanished into the Heathrow crowd. That was kind of really weird. Now, there was nothing paranormal about him, but I did get a feeling that he'd been sent out, kind of thing. And he didn't feel like paranoia. He actually felt that's exactly what it was, you know.
Do you think you were targeted, or was it just one of those things?
I do think that something was going on, because a lot of strange things went on around that time as well that were, didn't amount to much on their own, but were kind of similar to that. But again, I think I think most people in the UFO subject to a degree are watched because, not necessarily because you're investigating UFOs, but because there's this tendency to believe that if you investigate UFOs, you're probably a conspiracy theorist, and if you're a conspiracy theorist, you probably believe in some political conspiracies, and then you're seen as a troublemaker, you know, so you go from being a ufologist to a troublemaker via all these different steps. And I think that's why a lot of people in the subject are watched, because they are perceived, you know, I think they kind of view ufologists the same way as they do as somebody who demonstrates for animal rights, or somebody who demonstrates when an old tree is about to be chopped down. You know, they view us as tiresome meddlers. And so I think that's why we're all watched to some degree. And I think probably, you know, just a routine little file probably is opened on a lot of people. You know, that's not paranoia. I mean, for example, through the Freedom of Information Act, George Van Tassel's FBI file of service, that's 300 pages plus. You know, Adamski's is more than 100. Albert Bender's is like 75. George Hunt Williamson's is about 45 pages. You know, so all those guys back then did have files on them. We probably do today. But, again, I don't think it's because they think John Smith or Bill Jones or whoever has the answers. It's because they see you as, in today's world, even more so than in the Cold War, they see us as, you know, as troublemakers, really.
Did you ever look to see whether Jim Moseley or Gray Barker had FBI files that you could retrieve?
I actually haven't. But the problem is, if a person's living and you want to get their FBI file, you have to get written permission from that person, and you have to then, you know, go to the FBI with all the documentation proving that the person has given you permission. Now, if the person's dead, you have to provide an official obituary for the person.
Let's go into more of that in a moment. Okay, this is interesting. We have Nick Redfern, and now we're now going into FBI files. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. There's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-290-8480. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-290-8480. That's 1-800-290-8480.
Hi, I'm Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies? That's why we are fighting to end premature birth and birth defects along with the March of Dimes. You can do something today to give them tomorrow. Your support means programs, education, life-saving research, and a voice for families in the newborn intensive care unit. Together we can save babies' lives. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.